let me introduce you to a new book by Simon Bowne. Verified Near-Death Experiences. Simon Bowne, acclaimed podcaster and hypnotherapist, announces the release of his groundbreaking book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife. Through detailed accounts of events observed during clinical death and startling moments of validation, Simon Bowne offers compelling insights into the mysteries of the afterlife. Verified Near-Death Experiences is a thought-provoking book that will leave readers questioning what lies beyond. Available soon.
Welcome to Our Paranormal Afterlife. This is Our Paranormal Afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week I'm talking to Elle Saramaga about her near-death experience. In 2015, Elle was in a coma, on life support, and was given last rites. Her family was told to let her go, as doctors said they had done all they could. The prognosis said if she lived, she would probably be in a vegetative state, but that living probably would not happen, as she had less than 1% chance of living. Hi Elle, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
So we're going to talk about your near-death experience. So how did it start out? What is it that put you in a position where you would have a near-death experience?
It was quite shocking. I didn't really know anything about these types of experiences, so it wasn't really in the forefront of my mind, or didn't really have any clarity even after it happened. But I had what seemed to be a mild infection, and I thought that it was mild, but I was going to visit family and felt like I was able to travel, my daughter and I. And things just progressively got worse after I arrived to see my family. And if I hadn't gone to still see them, I asked my daughter, I said, do you think we should still go? And, she's very in tune as well. And she said, yes, I think we should go. But if I hadn't gone to see them, the situation could be very different because I wouldn't have any supportive system around me during those critical times. So I became septic after I had a reaction to a particular medicine. And when I became septic, I was induced in a coma for 2.5 months, and my organs began to shut down, and I was on life support. It's also called ECMO. And basically, I just started shutting down little by little. And it was during that time that I had my near-death experience and death-death experience, I guess you would call it, which is when you really cross over. And I didn't understand what happened after I survived and after I came out of the coma, but it took some time for me to process it and talk about it and analyze the experience. But that's the summary of what happened. I've since understood that there are different types of near-death experiences depending on the situation. And I know that it sounds a little strange to say, but I'm glad that I was hovering between life and death before fully, crossing over due to the coma, because I got a chance to, looking back at it and see what the experience is like on the other side or the in the afterlife, and for people who are hovering between life and death and what that's like. And I see spirit-based things, paranormal things, ghosts, whatever. I see things differently now, orbs. I know it sounds strange, but it's kind of like I can relate now and I can understand where they are and what they might be going through, I guess, is the best way to say it.
When you went into the coma, I suppose that they gave you some anesthetic and some put you to sleep?
Yeah, it was when you're induced, you're given a sedative. They sedate you completely. And especially if you're... So I had renal failure and I had lung failure. So basically what happens is the body is in the process of completely shutting down function. And for my, my daughter was telling me this after the fact, for my lungs, there's the machine that helps you to breathe, which is ECMO. It breathes for the lungs and it takes out, oxygenates you. And there's pink foam that comes out when there's a CO2 in the lungs. And she told me, "Mommy, the vestibule was filled with just all pink foam," which meant that my CO2 level was just remaining high. They didn't understand why. They couldn't figure it out. And they told my family that it's not survivable and that if by a miracle I happened to survive, that I would most likely be brain dead. And so it is, the sedation is so that your body can calm down in order to not be too active, but at the same time, your organs are shutting down. So there is, there's a difference. There are other things that are going on that make it difficult for your body to continue to stay in the, even on life support, where it is to stay stable, basically.
But do you have an idea of when your experience started? Like, did you go into the coma and it was a month later you had your experience?
You know, that is a great question. And I haven't been asked that question in a really long time. And when one of the things that happens is time is really an illusion and is not really a real thing. So to break down things in a linear fashion, when you're in the spiritual realm, it doesn't really work. What I can say is that of the things that I remember, if you can imagine a straight line and you take the line and pull it into a circle, that's kind of how my experience was. It wasn't the initial. I know that it wasn't initially when being induced. And the initial part of being induced, I don't remember anything. What I remember is after some time, and I don't know where it was in the time structure of actual reality, but it was after some time, I remember being outside of my body and looking at people, looking at me, who were, and not really processing and understanding what was going on. And I think maybe the mind gets overwhelmed. And then the next thing I saw was instead of being in the room, I was outside of the room in, for example, in space. I was told I was in, a different dimension, and I had several guides, and my mind wasn't processing the same way. I didn't stop to think, well, what happened to the hospital, or where's my child, or, some of the more realistic based things, where are you? What time is it? Things like that. It was more my mind adapted to this new reality almost instantly and accepted the fact that I had three people guiding me, speaking to me telepathically about this and that, taking me to space. And, you know, when I was in space, floating, seeing nebula and not thinking to myself, what's wrong with this picture? It was more just wrapped up in the moment and very kind of just feeling like, wow, you know, this is amazing. And I looked down at myself and myself wasn't there. My physical self wasn't there. And then I heard, you're an orb. And I realized, and I said to myself, wow, this is what it's like to be an orb. And after the fact, I've seen orbs and things like that. I was able to understand what was in that orb. It's, you know, that the soul was in that orb. The orb is the person, is the soul of the person, not the entire body. So that's kind of a rambly long way to answer that question, but the experience is multidimensional. It's kind of stacked. It's not linear. So, and I can only pick out times based on my, based on my memory, the things that popped out to me most, and remembering that, you know, going in and out of my body before completely crashing. So, that's essentially what it was like.
And how was your perception? I suppose it wasn't kind of groggy and dreamlike.
No, not at all. Actually, I will say in the very beginning, when I was first sedated, there I felt groggy and dreamlike, but that went away very soon. And, you know, I'm kind of, I'm analytical. And so I kind of grilled and interviewed my family about their observations because I was trying to process the experience before talking about it. And I was trying to, you know, do my own sleuthing about what really happened. And that's, you know, what helped me to make sense of everything. In the beginning, there was a dreamier feeling, but that went away. And then when I asked my family, you know, what happened here? And they said, you were going to die, basically. And because I remember that dreamy feeling stopped, and then I was actually in a reality-based feeling. So meaning that, you know how you could tell when, for example, you're in your room at night and you could tell when you're in a dream versus, let's say, you see something in your room and you could tell that that is, you're having that real experience, that there's actually something going on. So you could tell their differences of what a dream feels like and what a real or lived experience feels like. And so when I lined up the things that they were telling me when I was at most critical, and the things that I remembered, it made sense to me that I wasn't actually in my body at that particular time based on, and why I wasn't, based on what they were telling me, because, you know, like I mentioned before, my organs were shutting down. There were certain things going on. I was continuously having to be saved, I guess. As they were trying to work on different things to, you know, bring me back, keep me alive, etc.
So when you were outside of your body, did you see events, like maybe things that your family did or the medical staff did? And then after the coma, you talked to them about it and they confirmed that happened.
Yes. For example, I saw myself in a procedure room. And I didn't realize that the body was mine, but I was on like a procedure table and some doctors were talking about me and I was getting mad because they sounded very pessimistic about my outcome. And I was trying to talk to them and saying, what are you talking about? I'm right here. You know, there's nothing wrong with me. you know? And they had mentioned something about my heart as well. And so that was one of the times. And then also there was a time where I was out of my body. I remember, like, it's kind of hard to explain. You kind of like push in to your body. I was out of my body, pushed in because I was attracted to hearing singing. And I heard singing, and then I saw a couple of people singing that I knew by my bedside. And I, after the fact, I confirmed that there were several people from the church that I used to go to that came to sing by my bedside, and the song that they were singing as well. So those are just a couple of instances where, you know, I had spoken to people and yeah, and they confirmed some things.
So when you talked to the doctors and they confirmed you'd had that conversation, the doctors tend to be very kind of materialistic. Did they freak out at all?
The doctors didn't go into the conversation. But I confirmed the experience about the procedure room. So the doctors wouldn't, you know, I didn't speak to them much. They wouldn't confirm anything, but my family confirmed about the procedure room and what was being done and, you know, what the doctors told them. So that's how I got confirmation. But the doctors themselves didn't tell me what, you know, the details of what they were talking about and why they were saying they were, what they were saying. It was through my family after they were told by the doctors.
So you got to a point where you were with, was it three spirit guides? Could you tell us about them?
Sure. One was a male Caucasian spirit guide, but there was something otherworldly about him, as though He was very angelic, or maybe even extraterrestrial. I really felt kind of like Pleiadian type of energy or angelic. And he spoke to me telepathically. He was the guide that took me through space, and he took me to another planet. And we observed an ET culture, and he said, "This, you know, there are other intelligent life forms in the universe." And he felt kind of like a big brother type of energy, and just kind of, you know, I had a lot of questions, and so he would answer my questions. And the way that he would answer my question was kind of pushing me into the experience. And then, so again, the answer and the questions weren't really linear. They weren't really like saying a sentence from the beginning to the end of the sentence. They were more experiential, where it's like it was a dimension. You felt more of the feeling, you saw with your eyes, the experience, and then you absorb the knowledge and understanding through that, if that makes sense. So it was more, he answered a lot of different questions for me about why is there so much pain in the world, and, you know, what's going on with this situation, and why is the world like this, and why are, you know, just, I had a lot of questions in regards to things like that. So I was shown experiences of things that were going on based on that. But again, you know, some of those experiences were not good, but they answered my questions. And I remember my heart kind of being protected. Like if I started feeling emotional in the situation, I was pulled out of it right away. So, so that's what one of that guy did. That guide was also there at the very end when I was crashing. I didn't know that I crashed. But when I confirmed with my family what was going on, they told me. When I saw a light come out in the room that I was in that was extremely bright and panned around the room. And then he told me to stick out my left hand, and a silver sphere appeared there. And then when the way that I felt was very detached from the situation, even though it was serious. And even though I was at my last moments, and he said, "It's not your time." And he also, it wasn't like an introduction. It was more like he was just there. But I saw Jesus, and Jesus was speaking and said, you know, that he loves me, and confirmed, you know, that I needed more time. And then that was it that I remember. That was the last memory that I had of my entire experience. But that guide was there. The other guides were, there was another one that kind of showed me that all life forms that are living are conscious. So I was placed in different life forms in order to experience their consciousness. So I wasn't myself acting as like one was a lily. I actually was a lily and had lily thoughts and saw from a lily perspective. So my mind kind of shifted to be that thing. So I was put in several different life forms to see consciousness from their perspective. And I was told that all life forms are conscious, plant and animal.
And was there a guide that looked like your sister?
That was the third one. The guide that looked like my daughter. That guide, it's kind of strange because, okay, so you know how you know when something is not, I'm trying to find a good example. I knew that she wasn't my daughter, but I accepted her presence, and her presence was comforting because she looked like my daughter. And she never spoke, and that's how I knew she wasn't my daughter. But and the fact that she was there when I was having a death experience, but she looked like her so that I would be comforted and I would stay, you know, I would decide to kind of fight and stay alive, because there's a point when you're in the spiritual realm facing death, which I've come to understand after the fact, that sometimes you are told that it's not your time, but sometimes you're given a choice. So some people are told, some people are given a choice. If your body is irreparable and you're not, you know, there's no way that you can come back from the state. For example, a car accident, you're completely mangled. You have one lung and I'm talking like really bad. Or, you know, you're at the last stages of cancer, for example. There's some aspects of the body that just cannot bounce back. And so then you have to leave, even though you may want to stay. But she was there to kind of help me to continue to fight on. and also to comfort me because I'm very close to her. So she was the third one.
Was there a great feeling of love and acceptance? Because I hear that a lot from near-death experiences.
Yeah, it's and that's one of the things that, you know, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I've heard others say as well that, and it was definitely for myself, that when you come back, you feel disenchanted, honestly, with the world. You feel kind of like, you know, you realize that the impermanence of this life and that things here don't really matter, and that we tend to obsess about and process things that and put a lot of importance on things that aren't even real, you know, things that are not even important. In the afterlife, everything was very freeing. There was a lot of, I experienced a lot of love other than the experiences that I was placed in to answer my questions. The time when I spoke with Jesus, I felt a lot of love. That the guide that was speaking to me telepathically, I felt a lot of love, like a big brother type of love. Being in space, I felt the love from the universe. I felt embraced. I felt a sense of, you know, understanding. So that is very hard to replicate in this world. And I don't think it's replicatable in the world other than somebody going within and creating that for themselves on a daily basis. So the only way to create that same sense of love is to be within yourself daily and pull it out and encircle yourself in that.
Did you see any deceased loved ones in the experience?
I saw some, what I was told were loved ones that I didn't recognize, you know, I think they were ancestors that I didn't know, but I didn't see any, like any loved ones that I did know, other than the guide that looked like my daughter.
So did you have a point while you were in the coma that you did actually die, that your heart stopped and your brain flatlined, or did that not happen?
What I was told was that the doctor said they had to take me off of life support. And my family previously had fought, you know, with them to keep me on life support because the concern was that my body was not strong enough to live without it and to bounce back. But I was kind of just hovering in a death state being on life support. So it came a point where they said, you know, we're going to have to take her off. I think to pacify my family, they said, we'll put her, you know, if it looks like she's, you know, going to breathe on her own or whatever, then we'll put her on what's called an oscillator. And they didn't even use that technology any longer. I was told it was in a basement. It had to be brought up. And it's an old technology, but it's more gentle than the ECMO machine. Because with the ECMO machine, you kind of vibrate a little bit harder. So they took me off and I crashed. And then I started to breathe again. And then they put me on the oscillator to help me to continue to breathe. And then they did not sedate me anymore, as far as, or I should say, not that I wasn't necessarily sedated, but they didn't sedate me again. They just let me be on the oscillator and bounce back little by little. And then once they put me on the, I was told that that was a weekend when that happened. So you know, let's say it was a Saturday or something like that. I was told that by the next day, I was 50% better. So to go from dying one day to being, to breathing again and being on my own and being 50% better the next day, I thought was amazing.
Hello, this is me, Simon. Did you know that during a past life regression, you can meet with your spirit guide? I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom, and I've guided many clients to a spiritual encounter with their guide. If you would like to ask me how a session would work for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. And did the doctors tell your family of a percentage of likely to survive?
Yeah, they said that I had a less than 1% chance of survival. And all of the doctors themselves hadn't seen anyone survive my situation. That's why they had opted to take me off of life support, because they were not familiar with anyone living. You know, in general, the statistics are for people who are on ECMO that even if they survive it, many of the people die after a year of being on ECMO. So,
can we talk about this other planet or this other intelligent species you saw?
Sure.
Did you say something like they're on a different frequency to us?
No, I was on a different, yes, I was on a different frequency to them. And the reason I say that is my guide was telling me, well, let me back up a little. So when I got to this planet and I was kind of like in a corner with my guide observing them, and they were going about their day. And this was in a, like, there was a, They had buildings, and there was they had activity, like daily activity that we would have here, but their skin was very pale, and some of them seemed to have glow underneath with different colors, like it was kind of whitish but almost translucent, and then, you know, like say one would have like maybe a slight greenish, like a greenish glow under it. And others would have like maybe a bluish glow. I have no idea what the meanings of that is and what it represents, their differences, but that's how they looked. And I looked very, when I looked at my, looked down at myself, I was very deformed. Like I wasn't, I didn't, it felt I was like my body wasn't the same, basically. And my guide said that my frequency was different, so my body wasn't presenting the same way that that it would if I were also from that planet. And they didn't seem to be afraid. They seemed to be aware, you know, and I was getting all of this telepathically, that they were aware of humans. So the difference is that if we saw an ET being here, we would probably freak out. But they were, you know, they were completely aware about human beings. So they knew about humans. And I got the sense that they weren't in a system very far from where we are. So that was the experience on the planet.
Did you get the impression they were more spiritually advanced than us?
In general, they were more advanced than us. I hesitate to say more spiritually advanced because I didn't interact with them enough to know, and I didn't ask my guide about the details about them. I was more wrapped up in watching them go about their day and watching them do things. So I don't know if they're more spiritually advanced or not, but they're definitely more advanced. And the fact that they knew about humans, psychologically, I would say that they're advanced, but I don't know if they were spiritually more advanced.
So why did the guide take you there? Why did they show you this?
Because I asked. This was one of the times where, you know, in my life review, I mainly was a bag of questions. You know, what is this? What does that mean? Does this really exist? Does that happen? You know, the kind of like that. So this was one of the questions that I had, was whether or not there really, really was intelligent life in other parts of the universe. And the answer is yes.
Did you have that kind of life review where you were showed your whole life and you saw emotions and events and how you affected other people?
Mm-hmm, I certainly did. And I was even shown future events, not only world future events, but for me personally as well. And I didn't realize that that those events were future events until after the fact, when I started seeing things happen. The first future event that I saw and that I realized in, you know, in life now, life here, that I realized that it was a, I was seeing the future was, I can't remember, I think it was 2016, the Olympics. And I was shown that Kim Jong-un was going to try to, Kim Jong-il was going to, try to embrace the West. And the reason being was that, and it's a reason that was not, made publicly known, something very significant happened to him with the separation from a loved one, or maybe the death of a loved one, somebody that he really revered. And he was going to try to be very, more open, embracing, and to get along with South Korea and the West. And so I saw, like certain, you know, behaviors, things he was going to do. And I didn't really say anything about it because I was still processing my NDE. I didn't know that some of these things were future events. I just know that I saw them, but I couldn't understand why I did. And I was watching TV and right around that time saw how the Kim Jong-il start to do that. And for a while, he even started wearing suits instead of the uniform that he is accustomed to. And that was my first indication that I asked myself, wow, were these future events that I saw? And then I saw, and then other things that happened, and then certain things in my own personal life. And then I realized that some of these things were future, that was the only way that I knew that some were future events. But at the time, I didn't realize it. I just, again, nothing was linear. Everything was just kind of like stacked. And I was put in different experiences, shown different things. And it was like a soup of experiences, not really being told, oh, this is going to happen this particular time. Watch out for it. So, you know, I was just shown and then expected to understand, but I didn't initially understand why I was seeing or experiencing certain things. Some of the things I did, but some things I didn't.
Did they show you things about the past of Earth and how Earth developed, or what's going to happen in the future of Earth?
No, I didn't ask about the past too much, but I was told that within 5 to 7 years, we were going to have a new reality, and that that time would start from when I started seeing certain things. I believe it was the time from, you know, when we started seeing the silver spears. I think it was in 2023. And that's one of the reasons why I was told to stick my hand out and a silver sphere appeared, because it was significant. But from that time, 5 to 7 years, we were going to go through a time where our reality would be in the process of shifting, that a new age would be in the process of coming through. And around, I think it was late 2022, I started I started going on TikTok and finally sharing some of the things. And that was one of the first things that I shared, was that there's nothing really anyone can do to truly prepare other than to prepare their minds and their hearts. So I, you know, shared a little bit of what I saw and was told, but the main thing I kept on telling people was that they needed to develop a meditative practice daily, because their mental health could be impacted if they didn't, as well, in order for them to not only help usher in, but to also become a part of this new reality, their frequencies needed to align. So in order to do that, they needed to be in, you know, in the proper state, for lack of better words, in order to embrace this new reality and this new earth. So we're still within that time, and there are going to be things that that we may agree with and some things that we may not agree with. There are going to be things that may be devastating. But in the end, when everything is all said and done, we will be in a better reality. We'll be in a better, earth, and in a better, dimension of reality. So we need to continue to kind of take our experiences of love and higher vibration, everything else. We need to kind of pull it out of ourselves daily, envelop ourselves in it, and keep moving. Because when things are all said and done, everything will be okay, even though things may be a little bit chaotic before then.
And is this big change, is it kind of a big spiritual thing? Is there something to do with UFOs involved?
It is a spiritual thing. All of it is spiritual. All of it's energy. I got that before that UFOs were going to be a part of the equation, and that we would be from 2020, late 2022. That was the other thing that I'd said, was that I shared my experience of going to another planet, and that other life forms are real. And I also said then that we were going to start seeing more UFOs, and we're going to have more interaction. We're going to have major contact events, and we're going to see that ETs are real. So that's what I was saying at that time. And since that time, you know, there's been a lot that's been coming out in regards to ETs, and there's going to be more as well.
Did you get any kind of message that might have said that mankind is spiritually off track, so to speak?
Yes. The reason why some of this is taking place is we have finished one age and we're into a new age. to try to help us to be off track or to be on track, because we have been off track and we were kind of careening towards non-existence. So, and that's one of the reasons why Earth is the way that it is, because we're off track. We're actually in our age and in, you know, and in our modern society, we're less aware than ages before us, other time periods before us, some which were more advanced spiritually than our current and modern age. So there is a desire to help us to get on track without doing too much intervention too soon. But there is going to be a time where there's more intervention from our ET cousins.
Do you feel there was any intervention in the past, maybe thousands of years or even more than that, like they messed with our DNA or something?
Yes, that was one of the things that my guide told me, was that we are actually hybridized human beings, and we have mixture of DNA from other intelligent life forms in varying degrees. And in the past, of the evolution story, in the past, the ET beings assisted our evolution. They didn't create us, and they aren't our gods, but they assisted. And that's why in our, you know, today, we have a propensity to kind of do the same thing with other life forms. We have a propensity towards genetic advancement, or in medicine, we have a propensity to, you know, we're following the same pattern that's kind of written in our coding, our DNA coding, mentally and spiritually, and even physically, to try to advance life forms. So that's why we have that, you know, within us, and that's what was done with us.
Did you have a time during your experience where you saw something that was like the Akashic Records?
Yeah. Well, when I had my life review, that was the Akashic Records. It was more of a, for me, it wasn't a library. It was like a holodeck. It was like stepping into the experiences. that was the Akashic Records. And the Akashic Records is a real thing. I was very surprised after the fact that I learned that Nikola Tesla first talked about, he was one of the first people to start mentioning the Akashic Records, or what we call the Akashic Records, basically stating in regards to physics that there is a place where time is recorded, where events are recorded, things like that.
There's so much stuff to think about here in your experience. Do you feel that it's been a real change for you? Because they call them spiritually transformative, don't they, these near-death experiences?
Yeah. For me, it has been. I think that I was more, I started out my spiritual journey being open, became more fundamental, and then from my experience became open again. And it inspired me to study to be a geneticist and doctor. So based on some of the things that I learned and saw, they're not necessarily things that medicine would necessarily agree with, but I mean, some might be open to it. I've since started seeing certain things that I was already told in 2015 in my experience that, like I said before, plants are conscious and other life forms are conscious. And only recently, last year, saw science articles where scientists are now saying that plants are conscious and they actually have the same ocular parts that we have in our eyes. They have all over their bodies, and they can at least see, like if somebody's standing next to a tree, the tree can observe the color of the person's shirt, for example, and that they do have conscious responses. And again, in my experience, I was told that, but now it's coming out. So I am not too worried about what may or may not be accepted, you know, as I'm in the medical field, because I'm more concerned about the real side of life, which is the afterlife, and not this side of life, which is just our current reality to help train us for the afterlife.
So was there any mention or hints about reincarnation being a reality?
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's one of the things that I fundamentally, I had a question about. I wasn't, you know, fundamentally, it's not accepted, but I believed it before that. But then kind of, it was one of those debatable things for me. So, and I didn't put too much more focus on it. But now I have confirmation that reincarnation is definitely true. And the reason why we reincarnate is because we cannot possibly get everything and understand everything for our soul's perspective in one lifetime. We have to be other people and think like other people and, you know, be in the experience of other people's experiences to understand the totality of life and to understand the totality of existence. So that's why we have to go through several lifetimes in order to train in different aspects of our soul so that we're able to move forward. And in the end, we become a celestial body. And that is the achievement of a lifetimes, however many lifetimes that ends up being, of training, understanding, redirection. And remember, we're extensions of God. So God created us to experience itself. And so in order for us to do that, we have to experience all of these different things. But then we are also like God, and we also have to have these extensions ourselves of various different life experiences in order to become more whole in our soul.
And did you get an idea that perhaps there are past lives on other planets?
I knew that I had several past lives on other planets. I saw two of them, not in my near-death experience, but after the fact, when I think as an NDE-er, after you have the experience, you have kind of like a superhighway connection to information and to the divine, because you're not completely disconnected from your experience and from where you were. So I saw that I had a couple of past lives where I was an ET being, and I wasn't a human. And I think that, you know, I can't speak for people, but I think that others will probably have past life experiences as well that were on other planets. I know of one person who was told when she went to what sounded like a planet of Pleiadians, she was told, "Welcome home." And she didn't recognize any of the beings, but they said that they were her family.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Oh, no problem. I did want to share that I made certain shifts in my life after this. And one of them was, besides studying medicine, I also helped to found an organization called the Ascension Institute that people can go to at ascending.com, ascendinginstitute.com. And the Ascension Institute is a group of entrepreneurs and people who are, you know, of like-mindedness and, you know, spiritually aware, that come together to support projects in communities that are meaningful and help the community. So that's what Ascending Institute or Ascension Institute is all about. And again, it's ascendinginstitute.com. And we do have a book coming out soon that will be published March 1st called Different Paths to Source. And this is a book compilation of individuals that's, you know, some of the audience might know some of these people because they're spiritual influencers. And it shares their different perspectives of getting to source and getting closer to God on a spiritual journey and advice from that perspective and things like that. So
is that book on pre-order now? Is it on Amazon?
It will be available on pre-order on February 14th and be published and available to send to you March 1st.
Great. That's great. Sorry, could you say the name of the book again?
Different Paths to Source.
Great. Okay. Well, I'll have a look for it and I'll put a link in the show notes. And
I'll send you information as well too.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Simon.
This week, I was talking to Elle Saramaga about her near-death experience. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group. And if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.